Ladies and gentlemen, sports fans alike, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky's Sports Talk Chicago, one of the couple, two, three best podcasts around. So sit back, grab yourself a cold one and a Polish sausage, park your keister in the French room, and listen to Bill Swirsky's Sports Talk Chicago.
In Chicago, you know that all sports rock. The Bears, Hawks, Bulls, Cubs, and Sox. Pick your favorite, you can choose, as long as the Packers lose. For everything you need to know, it's Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago. Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago.
Hey everybody, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. This is your hosts, Alex and Sean. On this episode, we are going to be talking about the end of the Bears regular season, the finale, dunzo. We'll be talking a little baseball, a little basketball. But first, I'd like to thank our sponsor, the Rockford IceHogs. If you're not familiar with the Rockford IceHogs, they're the AHL minor league affiliate of the Chicago Blackhawks. What does that mean for you? You get to see the stars of tomorrow today at family-friendly, affordable prices. Season is going on right now, so head on over to icehogs.com, get yourself a hat, shirt, jersey, tickets, and more. Tell them Swirsky Sports sent you. Alex, it is done. The season is over. The Bears finished at 3-14. And the number one pick in the NFL draft.
A few weeks ago, we thought that the Texans had it all but wrapped up with the first overall pick. It was a near impossible dream. And now all of a sudden, we find ourselves with the first overall pick with over $100 million in cap space on top of that. And we have our guy under center. And I mean, honestly,
and
it feels great.
He didn't get a major injury.
No, and you know what? There was a while where I was afraid that was going to happen, and I'm going to give the Bears their props for not trying to be like, oh, you know, well, he needs some more experience in this Week 18 game versus the Vikings. They quickly shut down any possibility of him playing this week. I think it was, what, Wednesday they announced that Nathan Peterman was going to be starting? So we knew for several days that Justin Fields was done for the year. And this came after a game where myself and many others were quite critical because I felt that they should have taken Justin Fields out in the second half of that Lions blowout. Luckily, he didn't get too injured, and that point now is moot, but they did the right thing this week. They went out, they lost, and Lovie Smith delivered a Texans win over the Colts, ensuring the first overall pick.
And that Texans game, and we'll talk about the Bears game, but that Texans game, the Texans jumped out to a quick, pretty big lead. And then Davis Mills just went, oh, let me just throw a couple of pick sixes. And I think all of Bears Twitter was like, that's it, done. Texans are done. I went to listen to the radio broadcast through the NFL app. And I'm like, oh, it's 4th and 20 with like under a minute left. No way. Texans are toast. And Davis Mills throws like a 28-yard touchdown pass. And when I watched the actual replay of it, because I was just listening to the broadcast, when I saw the replay, that ball should have been intercepted. It just went right through the defensive back's hands, right into the receiver's arms for a touchdown. And I'm like, oh man, the Texans are going to kick the extra point, tie this up. We're going to overtime. And if nothing else, it's going to be exciting to watch this overtime for the draft implications. But no, Lovey just went, F this. I'm going for two. Goes for two. The Texans get it. And I'm like, okay. The Colts offense stinks. They've got their ninth string quarterback in. There's no way with like 45 seconds left, they're going to march down the field and score. And they start marching down the field to score. And I'm like, well, it was nice while it lasted. And then on a play where the officials said that the the Colts went out of bounds, stopped the clock. It got reviewed and they said that he was still in bounds and to put 8 seconds on the clock, but the Colts were going to get a 10 second runoff or had to use their last timeout. At that point, they were at like 70 yard field goal range.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was, you needed a Hail Mary pass.
Yeah. It put them with that one timeout. If they would have got the clock stopped, it was 6 seconds at that point. They probably had enough time to throw about a 15 yard pass and call the timeout and come out there and try like a 55, 56 yard field goal, which is long, but makeable. But the guy not making it out of bounds changed everything. And the Texans win, and the Bears, coupled with the Bears loss, first overall pick.
I mean, that was a potential franchise destination changing day by the Bears. I mean, listen, if they would have ended up with the number two overall pick, that obviously would have had great value, but moving to the number one spot where all the possibilities are there, I mean, it's huge. It is absolutely huge. This can change the course of the Chicago Bears. They are in as good of a position as you can get to build something long-term. You mentioned earlier that it seemed like when the Texans lost the lead, I thought it was over too. I thought the same exact thing. I'm like, well, that dream is dead. And it seemed like for the first time in a very long time, like for once, the stars aligned for the Bears. Cause I'm like, you know, last week, if you'd have told me we would have wound up with the second overall pick, I would have been ecstatic. But when you had a taste of the first overall pick, having it and losing it would have felt it wouldn't have felt good. You would have obviously moved on and said, okay, second overall pick is still pretty good. But having that taste of the first overall pick and not getting it, that would have been tougher to swallow. But the fact that everything came together and they were able to secure that number one overall pick, I mean, it feels like the football gods were finally smiling down on the Chicago Bears. And now we have all the tools we need to make this team better. Nothing's guaranteed. Ryan Poles has all the pressure on him. He has to hit a lot of home runs in the draft, in free agency, with extending guys. There's a ton of pressure on Ryan Poles, but the tools to get better, the opportunities, it's all there.
Right. And for the Texans, going from one to two is not the worst thing in the world. They're going to take whoever the quarterback is that didn't get taken first.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like there was just one quarterback. Like it was only like if you had one surefire, crazy talented dude that whoever was going to get the number one overall pick was going to get him and then everyone else would miss out. Like you said, that's not the case. The Texans are still going to get the second overall pick. And if that loss would have like bumped them down to like third or fourth, that obviously would have been a much bigger deal. But at least Lovey goes out with a win. I don't know if he's going to go back to the Texans next year. We've heard rumors that it's going to be a one and done deal. But, you know, the Texans still are in a
Did I lose you?
No, I'm here.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so Lovey's probably going to get fired, which sucks. I mean, for him, not his fault. This is a bad ball club. And you don't have a lot of playmakers. You need a lot of help. And they've got cap room. And they have, if you look at the overall draft power rankings, so the total value of their draft picks, Houston is far and away has the best draft capital in the NFL. So they're going to be improved next year. I mean, I don't think this is on Lovey. But for the Bears, this is huge because number two pick is nice because whoever doesn't get picked one, you're going to get a haul. But that first overall pick, that allows you to pick possibly trade back and then trade back again. And a lot, you know, there's going to be teams that are desperate to get a specific quarterback, whether that be Bryce Young or CJ Stroud or the guy from Kentucky, because I'm sure he's going to jump up after the pro day. There's going to be teams that want a specific guy. Like, look at San Francisco. They wanted Trey Lance and they traded a boatload to get him. So having that first or overall pick is big. And if you look back, the last time that the number one overall pick got traded, the team got a haul. So
wasn't that Jared Goff?
That was Jared Goff. I went back and looked at a top 10 draft pick trades over the years, over the last 10 years, just to kind of get a feel of what the compensation is looking for or looking like. In the 2021 draft, the number three overall pick got traded for the 12th overall pick. And then a first and a third in the next draft and a first in the following draft. The number six and 156 got traded for 12, 123 and another first in the following year. And then the 10th overall pick got traded for the 12th and in the 84th. So significant drop off after that. In 2019, the only top 10 pick that got traded was the 10th, got traded for the 20th, the 52nd, and a third rounder in the following year. 2018, the number 10 got traded for the 15, 79, and 152. The number 7 and the 255th got traded for the 12th, the 53rd, and the 56th. And the number 3 got traded for the 6th, the 37th, the 49th, and the 2nd overall pick in the following draft. 2017, number 10 got traded for 27th, 91st, and a first rounder in the following draft. The number 2 overall pick got traded for the 3rd, the 67th, the 111th, and the following year 3rd. That was Trubisky.
Mm-hmm.
2016, number 9 got traded for number 11 and 106, and that was also the Bears for Leonard Floyd. 8 and 176 got traded for 15, 76, and the next year's 2nd. And number 1, 113 and 177 got traded for the 15th, the 43rd, the 45th, the 76th, and the following year's 1st and 3rd. The number 2 and a future set, a 4th, got traded for 8, 77, 100, the next year's 1st, and the 2 years away 2nd. 2014, number 4 went for number 9 and a 1st and a 4th the following year. And number 8 went for number 9 and 145th. That was a bad pick or bad trade. And then 2013, number 8 and number 71 went for number 16, 46, 78, and a future 7th. Number 3 overall went for the 12th and the 42nd. So, you know, there's plenty of room to get a lot of picks, but I mean, I think the max we're looking for or probably getting is 3 firsts. That's the max.
Mm-hmm.
So I just my concern is making sure that we trade with somebody that keeps us in the first half of this first round, so we get an impact player for next year.
Yes.
Along with other picks.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And now I had this dream scenario. I mean, imagine if this happened. If the Houston Texans, I know it's between like Bryce Young and CJ Stroud. From what it seems like, it seems like Bryce Young is talked about a little bit more. So like, what if Bryce Young was projected to be the first overall pick and the Texans were really married to him? So they traded one spot to move up back to the first overall pick with the Bears. And then somebody else wanted CJ Stroud if he was going number two, and the Bears traded down again. I mean, wouldn't that be just like an absolute dream scenario? Like all those picks we would rack up?
Oh yeah, absolutely. You know, and honestly, if I'm the Bears and Texans want the number one pick, you know, I don't think you're going to try to fleece them, because it honestly helps you. If you get their first, you know, the number two pick and their second rounder, I'm almost inclined to just take that, because mm-hmm. then you're going to get the big haul. When desperate teams are like, all right, well, in a two quarterback, you know, draft, one's gone already. That's when people are going to go crazy, try to get the other one. And you're going to wind up with a bunch of picks, especially when you look. So we sort of know the order right now of the draft.
Yep. I have it in front of me right here.
So the Bears will pick first, Houston second, Arizona third, Indianapolis fourth, Seattle fifth, the Lions sixth, Vegas seventh, Atlanta eight, Carolina nine, and the Eagles 10.
Yep, those are going to be your top 10 picks. So, I mean, looking at those top 10, you kind of try to look and see which ones need a quarterback. The ones that stick out to me are the Colts, the Seahawks, the Vegas Raiders now, because it seems like the Derek Carr era is over. And I think Atlanta, Carolina would be interested too.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. What? Because Atlanta has had a mid-round quarterback picked, but I don't know what their expectation of him is. And Carolina is just kind of a hot mess. Eagles obviously don't.
Right.
And Arizona's in a tough boat, because who knows when their quarterback is back. Because
yeah,
he's not,
I think that the future's a little murky with Kyler Murray,
because he's not going to be back. He's going to miss a big chunk of next season, and if not the
whole
season.
But he's under contract, though,
he's
right?
He's under contract, so they're not going to. Arizona's not going to go after a top tier quarterback, I don't think.
Right, I don't see it either. That's why I didn't even mention him.
So if I'm Arizona, you know, you're praying number three, you're praying that somebody doesn't pick a quarterback in the first two picks, because you want to be able to trade back. Because you're like, well, we don't need a quarterback. I mean, you're going to be shitty next year.
If there's a team kicking themselves over not having a top two pick, it's got to be them, right?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. The Colts, they're a team that could be desperate enough to trade up. And that would be the dream scenario, is if you're the Bears, is trading back to number two and then trading back from two to four.
Oh,
because
yes.
At that point you're getting a haul and you're still going to get one of the top two defensive players on the board.
Oh my God. I mean, please, the stars aligned for us today. Please align for us again in that same fashion. That would be a dream come true. The fact that you could trade down twice and still have a top four pick. Oh, please. Just let it happen. And I mean, Indianapolis, I have a lot of friends who are Colts fans, and some of them listen to this show. And we've talked plenty of times about the future of the Colts. And we all agree that they can't keep doing the, hey, let's find another veteran to come in. You've done it with Matt Ryan. It didn't work. You did it with Carson Wentz. It didn't work. You did it with Philip Rivers. It didn't work. Like, that whole string of just bringing in veteran guys has got to stop. They need to draft their next long-term solution.
Right. Well, I mean, the problem is that they were a good team that had a young quarterback just retire early. And they still were a good team then, minus a quarterback. And they're like, okay, the conventional wisdom is let's plug in a veteran because we don't have the draft capital to go after a young stud. And okay, Philip Rivers, you know, you don't have a long shelf life with him, and it just didn't work at all. And then you're like, well, Carson Wentz is still young. Maybe this works out on this next stint. And that was abysmal. That's when they should have just been like, okay, you know, I think we're gonna have to bite the bullet. And at this point now, they're had a terrible season, and they have the fourth pick. They're not in the range to get one of those quarterbacks. You know, so unless Levis is their guy, and he's the unknown. You know, what's he gonna do when he has his pro day and you know the combine and whatnot? Is he gonna jump up? And he's gonna be a guy that people say, oh, you reached on, because the first two picks are the obvious one in Stroud and Young. And people are going to be like, oh, you reached on Will Levis.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of things that could happen there. I think that for me, if I were a Colts fan, I would try to get one of those top tier quarterbacks. I think that's what I would do. What the Colts will actually do, I don't know, but that's what I would do.
So, you know, I think they have to put in the chips to try to move up to the top two picks, I think.
Yeah. Now, you look at some of the other teams, too. I mean, Seattle absolutely needs a quarterback. Like, Geno Smith, it was a cool story with Geno Smith, but he's obviously not going to be your long-term solution. And, you know, you traded away Russell Wilson, which, you know, looked like a pretty good move. You had a nice bridge here with Geno Smith. Got you close to a playoff spot. It depends on what happens between the Lions and Packers tonight, but you're going to need a long-term solution. And, you know, I think it would be wise for Seattle to think about their long-term future under center. Then you look at the Lions. I'm not fully convinced that they're not going to take a shot at a quarterback, but if I was a betting man, I would probably say that they think that in their minds, if they're sixth and they would need to trade up a lot of capital, I would think that they'd be still comfortable rolling with Jared Goff, considering how good their offense was this year. If the Lions were maybe the 2 pick or even the 3 pick, if it required like trading up one spot, I think it would be a little different. But being down there at 6, I think the chances are less that they trade up and they roll with Jared Goff. And I think that's kind of what a lot of people are guessing right now, but we'll see what happens there.
Yeah. I think Detroit, the front office for the Lions are a lot more sold on Jared Goff than everybody else.
Right.
And, you know, if you think about it, Jared Goff was the number one overall pick not that long ago.
Mm-hmm.
He's
been to a Super Bowl.
He's been to a Super Bowl and he played well this year. You know, you got a haul for trading Matt Stafford, and you got him thrown in. He was a throw in the deal. And you're like, well, he's good enough to, I mean, they're arguably the best team that's not going to make the playoffs this year because the Lions are officially eliminated.
Mm-hmm.
So they're probably the best team that didn't make the playoffs. And they had an abysmal start. And the abysmal start was not part of the offense. The offense was cooking. It was the defense. So, you know, you're looking at, if you're the Lions, you're like, why wouldn't we just use that sixth pick and the probably what 17th or so pick and then just build up the defense rather than use draft capital to trade somebody that's probably not going to start over Jared Goff next year.
Right, exactly. I think that it would make sense for them to go after some of those top defenders because, look, if Jared Goff gets time in the pocket and his guys are schemed open, he'll hit them. You know, he's not going to take over a game by himself like a Pat Mahomes or a Josh Allen or a superstar quarterback. But if you do exactly what you need to do with protection, with scheming open, he'll hit those guys. I mean, you've said this before, the hardest that you will struggle with Jared Goff is if he's constantly under pressure. But, you know, they've got a good offensive line. They know how to protect him. So it would make sense that they didn't get a quarterback. I think that if they were in position to get one, it would make sense for them to get one. But you're in a good spot to take a pretty good defender, and you're in a good spot to roll forward with what you have offensively.
Yeah, I mean, I would say the Lions have one of the better offensive lines in football, and you've got a pretty good running game, and you've got two good wide receivers. You know, Jared Goff is in a piece. You're right. He is not an elite quarterback, and I think they're probably going to roll with him. He got two more years before they really have to pay him?
Mm-hmm.
I would ride it out and then see what kind of deal you can sign with him. Is, you know, as long as you're not paying him top 10 quarterback money, then, you know, I'll keep riding with him. You keep him upright. He's like Kirk Cousins ish. Like Kirk Cousins can pick you apart, but the minute you get a little pressure on him, just falls apart. I think Jared Goff is a very similar quarterback that he can get the job done. Just you better make sure he stays upright.
Yeah. And, you know, the other interesting thing too about the Lions situation is the fact that they have a really just nice balanced attack. It's not like, you know, remember when they had Calvin Johnson? And don't get me wrong, I think Matt Stafford was solid in the Calvin Johnson years, but like he was the main guy you really tried to cover. And this Lion, you know, yeah, Amon-Ra St. Brown's had a great season and you've seen really good things from him, but it feels much more balanced. You know, you look at the running back Williams and Swift, how well they've both done this year. The fact that they're able to spread the wealth out a little bit, I think has done them wonders.
Yeah, I mean, before Calvin Johnson, when they're one-dimensional that way, it was Barry Sanders, one-dimensional right. That way.
Right. And again, like, you know, I said, I think Matthew Stafford was a very solid quarterback even in the Calvin Johnson years. But, I mean, now it's you. There's a lot of moving parts that you have to worry about with the Lions. And when I look at the Lions, I kind of reminded of San Francisco because San Francisco has been that balanced attack with all the moving parts for a number of years now. And I've always said this too, if you put Jared Goff on the San Francisco 49ers, I think you're winning Super Bowls with that. So that's kind of the comparison I somewhat draw.
I mean, you're going to the playoffs with Brock Purdy and the 49ers and they're steamrolling teams.
They look good. The San Francisco 49ers look good. I know probably right now the betting favorite is the Eagles in the NFC, but I would not rule out the 49ers.
That Christian McCaffrey trade is looking so good.
That is a team I've wanted to be for years, man. I'll tell you, the 49ers, they got a smart front office. They make things work with the offense, even if all the pieces aren't like you know, big, shiny, fancy toys. I mean, look what you've done with Jimmy G. You've been to multiple NFC championships and a Super Bowl with Jimmy G. Jimmy G on the 49ers has won more playoff games than the Bears have under Ted Phillips. It's all because of that regime. And that's another topic I want to get to later, by the way. But we'll get there when we get there.
Yeah. So with this number one overall pick, I mean, we're a long ways off. The draft isn't until the end of April. And I mean, we could see a trade pre-draft. I mean, it's not unheard of. It's not that common, but it's not unheard of either. The Trey Lance deal was before the draft. But odds are, you know, this is probably going to be a draft night trade. I mean, what would be nice is if the Bears could work a pre-draft trade for somebody that's itchy to get up there and try to, you know, secure their guy. That way they have time to, you know, because a lot of the pre-draft stuff is you're mocking who's going to be available to you. And, you know, what if this team takes this player, how does the draft change? And you're working a lot of scenarios because, you know, the draft, If you've ever done mock drafts, you know, simulated mock drafts, when the guy that you expect to be there suddenly isn't there, or the draft doesn't play out the way you expect it, it's real easy to suddenly panic and not and make a bad decision, either overdraft a guy or not get the trade value. So understanding and really having a good sense of how the draft's going to play out is really important. And if the Bears are able to trade before the draft, it gives them more time to, you know, to work on those scenarios, knowing their next position.
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be a lot of months and days ahead of us, you know, to kind of see what they're going to do. There's going to be plenty of speculation. And Sean, I don't know about you. I'm sure you feel the same way. I would prefer on this show we're not speculating drafting a quarterback and moving on from Justin Fields. I am not entertaining that possibility, even if there's still like a 0.1% chance. You hear stuff about, oh, what if the Bears do draft CJ Stroud or they draft Bryce Young? I don't even want to entertain that idea.
No, it's dumb. It's flat out dumb. It's what's the people that are doing it are the the writers that are grabbing the low hanging fruit for clicks. That's what it is. It's not realistic. And It just doesn't make sense. Even if you're Ryan Poles and you're, you know, hey, these things you need to improve on with the quarterback, because there's definitely things that he has to improve on in Justin Fields. But are you going to start back at ground zero?
No. I mean, you're at ground zero pretty much everywhere else but the man under center.
It just doesn't make sense. You build around your quarterback that did some amazing things this year. You build on him. He did that with absolutely no offensive line. He did that with minimal weapons at wide receiver. So put an offensive line there. Let him, you know, give him better weapons. Let's see what he can do. At that point, look what happened in the third year with Josh Allen. Look at the third year with Jalen Hurts. You gave them a line and weapons, and suddenly they went from a guy in their second year going, oh, this guy's not too bad, to, oh shit, this is the guy.
Right. I think Jalen Hurts is one that he's gotten often comped to. And look at what the Eagles have done in his third year. I remember, I didn't think he was the guy, and he proved me wrong. Look at what he's doing.
I think the better comp is Josh Allen. I think Justin Fields is very Josh Allen-ish.
Sure. Yeah.
And if you give him that guy, that number one receiver, you're going to see great things. And, you know, I've heard a lot of people say, hey, would the Bears trade with the Raiders and get Davante Adams? And as a Bears fan, you go, absolutely, because you could easily absorb that contract, because it's not the signing bonus. You're only picking up that contract, which you can easily afford.
You have all the money in the world.
But I don't think the Raiders are going to give up Davante Adams.
I don't think so either. I think they want to figure out the man under center and then work Davante Adams with whoever they bring in.
Yeah, Davante Adams is whoever's going to be your quarterback next year. Davante Adams is going to make that person's life a lot easier. So you're not going to trade them away.
No, you're not. I mean, I would love Davante Adams on this team, but it's a pipe dream. And I think that there is something to be said about the idea of when you trade back and you get more draft capital, you might not necessarily use it all on drafting guys. You might use that in a trade to acquire an established asset already. I think that it would be wise if the Bears did use some of their draft capital that they gain on an established player. As much as I would love it to be Davante Adams, I think the chances are pretty small.
I mean, nothing with the Raiders is off the table.
No.
Because
they're the Raiders.
They're the Raiders, and their ownership is nuts. So nothing is off the table, but I would not put money on it. They've done way crazier things in the draft. So I don't think that's...
Is Sebastian Janikowski Jr. available?
They drafted a, mid second round tackle in mid first round. What was it? They drafted a wide receiver that everyone was expecting to be a third rounder in the first. They drafted a kicker in the first. Granted, he was a really good kicker for a long time, but you don't draft a kicker in the first round.
No,
it's they've just done some bonkers things. So they're the wild card. They're the Charlie from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia of the NFL. Is it possible with the Raiders? If it was any other team, I'd say no chance in hell. Since it's the Raiders, I'll give it a sliver of hope, but
it's just not very big.
Not very big. Not something that I would plan on. If the Raiders, just showed up on draft, they'd be like, here's Davante Adams. You go, awesome.
Yeah, right.
It's like playing the lottery. You know you're not going to win, and you don't change your life plans after you buy a lottery ticket. But if somebody was like, oh, hey, he won the lottery, you'd be like, oh, shit, nice.
I think I'd be saying a little more than that, but yeah, I get what you mean.
But you're not, when you buy a Powerball ticket, you're not planning on winning that and changing your life and quitting your job just because you bought that ticket. So
right.
Yeah. But somebody's got to win.
Right.
So but the drafting of another quarterback is off the table. It is not going to happen. It doesn't make sense. There's so many holes on this team that filling a hole that's not there is stupid.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I'm not drafting a cornerback high or a safety high because that's probably your second best group. I'm not drafting a quarterback early. I'm not drafting a running back early, not because they don't need it. It just doesn't make sense to. But any other position, if you told me that they're going to draft edge rusher high, okay, they need it. Interior defensive lineman, three technique, need it. Offensive tackle, guard, center, yeah, need those. Wide receiver, need. You know, you need these positions. So if you told me any of those positions, I'd be like, thumbs up. But if you tell me they're drafting a quarterback, if it's legit and the Bears are really considering it, then Ryan Poles isn't the guy I thought he was. If it's a writer that's writing it, then I just look at them like they're a fool looking for clicks.
That, and you know, maybe they're inside of the Bears and they're helping increase their draft pick even more. But you know, either way, no matter what I hear about it, I'm not sitting here thinking the Bears are going to draft a quarterback. Justin Fields to me has done enough to show he's the future. And we look at what Justin Fields did this past year. And I think this is really important. There are three things that are simultaneously true about Justin Fields in his 2022 season. He's shown the talent and has done enough things to show that he's the guy. He has plenty of things to work on. He's not a finished product. He's 23 years old, who still needs a lot to work on, whether it's reading defenses in certain situations. You know, the swing bubble screen passes have been a struggle. And of course, ball protection. You know, that's been a big one for a while. And number three, and I can't emphasize this one enough, his ceiling of what he can do in 2022 was limited because the roster was trash. You did not have protection. He was sacked 55 times, more than any other quarterback in the NFL. He was sacked on dropbacks, the percentage, far and away more than any other quarterback in the NFL. And his wide receivers were just, especially in the last third of the season, they were fours, fives in practice squad guys. Didn't get yards after the catch. Couldn't make a lot of catches that a lot of better wide receivers could make. It just, he didn't have anything around him. And it's really hard for him to carry the team on his back.
Absolutely. I mean, their leading wide receiver hasn't played in the last like 7 weeks.
Right.
And I think he's still the leading wide receiver.
Probably.
You know, I saw a couple of tweets from Dodo Birds about Nathan Peterman in the first half just threw for more yards than you'd expect in a Justin Fields whole game.
Why? Because of a few dump passes to wide open guys that in a game that teams were half playing capacity at.
And I'm not going to shit on Nathan Peterman. Is a lot of people shit on him because of that rookie year. He threw a lot of interceptions. But the guy has been around for a few years. He's played under good coaches. I think he's learned a lot under Gruden.
Sure.
So I'm not going to shit on him. And there were times he looked okay, but he ended up with 114 yards passing because he was under constant pressure.
I'll give him a good prop today. He made that nice throw to Velus Jones Jr. That was nicely done. And he was throwing with a little bit of zip on his throw. So yeah, I don't want to be too hard on Nathan Peterman either. I mean, he's got a pretty sweet gig. Third string quarterback gets to play with no pressure. That's pretty good. And I think you're right. I think he was able to learn a few things, and he's not a good quarterback, but at least he can, you know, go out there and I don't know if I'd say competently play, but you know, he made a few throws today. So you give him that, but man, reading into that, comparing to Justin Fields, oh my goodness.
I'm going to say this. I would be fine if they let Simeon go and kept Peterman as the backup, or if they draft somebody being third string. But nobody's going to play well with this offensive line. It's brutal. It's absolutely brutal.
Yeah. It's a turnstile. I mean, it's especially when Tevin Jenkins isn't out there. And that's an important thing too, because Tevin Jenkins has made a huge difference on your offensive line this year, but he's had the injuries, man. Can we rely on him playing a full season in the future? I don't know.
We don't know. We don't know what's is Braxton Jones going to be able to get stronger and keep that technique? You know, who are you going to find to fill that right tackle spot and the center spot? Are you going to try to upgrade at either guard spot? There's a lot of question marks. I just don't know the answers.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously there's a long time to think about those answers, but you know, going back just a minute to what Justin Fields did with a really bad offensive line. Remember this too. He was sacked 55 times this year. It could have easily been 60 plus if his elusiveness wasn't so great, if his athleticism wasn't so extraordinarily awesome. He worked his way out of a number of sacks this year, and some of them he turned into one of those big runs. You know, if he's not nearly that mobile, then you know what? Those are more sacks against him. That's just how bad the protection was through most of the year.
I mean, the protection was terrible. Terrible.
And how it goes back to my whole thing is, how can you expect to consistently get a guy working in the pocket on dropbacks when he's constantly being hit and sacked by the other team? It's just, it's really, really difficult. And that's why you look at some of the numbers of Justin Fields and you say, oh, well, you know, not a whole lot of passing yards, not as many passing attempts. Well, yes, there are times when I think there are guys he can, you know, make the check down to that he doesn't always take, that I think that it does need to get better, or reading in certain situations. But so much of the time he was under pressure the second the ball was snapped.
Yep. And, you know, Pro Football Focus is just, you know, one metric. But if you look at the numbers, Braxton Jones was average. Tevin Jenkins was above average. And Cody Whitehair, Sam Mustafa, Larry Borum were all below average players.
Yeah. Would it be fair to say this was far and away Whitey Coathair's worst year as a Bear?
You know, you can move on from him, save yourself some cap money. The problem is, it's a dilemma, is if he was the weak link and the rest of the line was okay, absolutely, you just move on.
Right, but right.
Because you need so many pieces,
mm-hmm.
You're like, what do you do? And he's getting older, and he had a couple of injuries this year. You're like, what do you do? I mean, you can afford to keep him and then also bring in somebody else. And then it's a competition. And then you have, you know, if he loses, you have player X at one guard, Tevin Jenkins at the other guard, and Cody Whitehair is the backup. That way you have somebody who's got a number of years as a starter that's riding the bench, which gives you better depth and just costs you money. Or do you just part ways with him, or do you just draft somebody and then let the draft pick compete with him? I mean, it's a, you know, and when you have so many holes in the offensive line, it's tough to completely rebuild your offensive line. And another problem with this offensive line is how many games did you play in this NFL season with what your expected offense, starting offensive line was going to be when you broke camp?
Probably very little.
I think zero. I think it's zero, because I think Sam Mustafa has played almost every game at center.
Yeah, I think so.
And he was not expected to be your center.
No.
Tevin Jenkins had a lot of injury time, and Cody mm-hmm. Whitehair. So Larry Borum, the right guard position or right tackle position, has been a revolving door. You've mm-hmm. played a lot of different guys there, with Alex Leatherwood, Riley Reiff, Larry Borum. And So you have had a complete rotating door of offensive linemen. And if you listen to any seasoned veteran offensive lineman, they'll tell you that playing offensive line in the NFL, especially now when you don't get a lot of padded practice before or during preseason, is you need time to be cohesive.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have players that aren't playing well and you don't have the cohesion. And that's just a double whammy.
No, so you're right.
Partly you need guys that are going to be healthy and better players. And
yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, relying on Whitey Coathair to be healthy at this point, you're probably like, that's looking a little low likelihood.
It's worrisome for both him and Jenkins.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, that's like you said, it is like a double whammy. Because Tevin Jenkins, I can't say enough about Tevin Jenkins and how good he's been for the Bears. But how many games did he play this year? It was maybe half a season.
Roughly.
I'm going to have to look that up, but we obviously know it was not a full season.
Yeah, it's a... Yeah, you need health and better play from everybody. I mean, Tevin Jenkins was really good when he was healthy, but just the health just wasn't there.
No, and neck injuries are very worrisome, obviously, and he's had back injuries in the past. So, you know, those are kind of two things where it does make you a tad nervous. Well, he played 13 games this year. That's more than I thought. It felt like he didn't play nearly that many, but he was kind of that, you know, that rotating in and out, and he started less than 13 games. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. He started like half the season. He was in more games than half, but in actually starting the game, it was a little more than half. And keep in mind, too, several of those games that he started, he was out on the first drive because of an injury. So you can say he started the Philadelphia and Detroit game, but he played 7% of the snaps in the Philly game and 13% of the snaps in the Detroit game. So he barely played those last two games.
Yeah, so
there you go.
You know, the Bears just have so many holes to fill, especially along the offensive line. You know, I know that the defense needs a whole lot of help,
especially the front seven. That defensive line is horrific.
I mean, I think you could even get away with the linebackers you have if you had a better front four. But you know, I think you have to just fix the offense and you rebuild that offensive line, add another weapon on a wide receiver. And I just still don't think Khalil Herbert is a solo back. You need a complimentary back.
I agree. I agree.
And you don't have that guy on the roster under contract for next year. So, I think you really got to fix that offense and then do the best you can on defense, with some patchwork veteran free agents. And then because you're not going to be able to fix everything with the draft.
No, I mean, that's the thing. There's so many holes to fill, and not only can you not fix everything with the draft, we've mentioned this before, the unfortunate thing about having all the cap space right now is that the free agent class isn't great this year.
Yeah, it's doo-doo sandwiches.
You know, I was just going to say, you know, not great, whatever. And, you know, you go with the doo-doo sandwiches. But frankly, you're probably more accurate.
It's not that there's not good free agents. It's that all of the best players are either going to be franchise tagged or extended before you have a chance to to bring them on.
Right, exactly. And that's the risk that Ryan Poles took. I mean, remember, we're sitting at a 3-14 season because we stripped it down to the studs. I mean, Ryan Poles did this for this reason, and knowing that they were going to have to completely rebuild this. And, you know, you have the cap space to do it. You have draft picks. You're going to get more draft picks if you do indeed trade down. It's just, it's going to be harder when you're not going to have an excellent pool to choose from free agent wise. Now, I would always argue that most of great football teams are built in the draft and free agents are just complementary pieces for the most part. The problem is the Bears roster is so far away from being a playoff caliber team.
Yeah. So I'm looking at NFL.com's list of top 50. Who wrote this? Greg Rosenthal from NFL.com has his top 51 NFL free agents. Number one, Lamar Jackson, not a position of need. Going to go after Lamar Jackson. Plus, I think he's going to get franchise tagged.
Yeah.
Roquan Smith, number two. Nope, not happening.
those bridges are burned.
That bridge just got just destroyed.
Ryan Poles just put TNT on it, and Roquan Smith lit a match.
Geno Smith, number three.
Nope.
Javon Hargrave, number four. That would be a good pick, but... excuse me, I don't think the Eagles are going to let him go. They're either going to tag him or extend him. I would be shocked if he's available. Orlando Brown, five. I don't think he's going to be available when the draft opens up. You know, there's a contract extension or the tag still available for him. Six, Tom Brady. No. Seven, Chauncey Gardner-Johnson. He's a safety. You don't need a safety. James Bradbury's corner. You don't need a corner. Saquon Barkley, nine. You're not going to pay the Saquon Barkley money. Although I would love to see Saquon Barkley on this team.
Wouldn't that be a beast to have him in Justin Fields?
Oh, absolutely. That would be a hell of a, with a real offensive line. That would be amazing. Number 10, Daron Payne. He's a guy that, He would be the dream guy I would like to bring onto this team as a free agent, but the Washington Commanders are going to keep him. There's no way if they can't get a contract extension done, they don't tag him. Jesse Bates, safety, not a position of need. Odell Beckham, wide receiver. Nope. Mike McGlinchey, offensive tackle, potentially, but I would be shocked if he's not brought back. Daniel Jones, he's a quarterback, not in a position of need. Draymond Jones, defensive tackle from the Broncos, possibly. I mean, if he's available. Juju Smith-Schuster, possibility. Jamel Dean, he's a cornerback, not really a position of need. Jacoby Myers, wide receiver, potentially. You know, so there's not a lot of elite players at positions you need.
Right. I mean, that's what makes it a little more difficult, but... you know, what you would hope you can do in free agency is identify guys that might not be the flashiest or the big shiny toys in free agency, but you find them, you identify them, you plug them in and you make them work. I mean, that's going to be a big part of this going forward is you see a lot of successful teams out there. The part of what they do is more than just getting the best, shiniest players in the NFL. They find guys and they're able to plug them in and make things work. And that's going to be a big part of what Ryan Poles needs to do going forward. Is he able to identify talent and find guys that might not be, you know, the big spotlight type guys? So I think that's going to be a major factor in this offseason if they're going to have any sort of success.
Yes. And that's going to be huge. This is the offseason where his clock starts.
Yes.
You know, he's got money, he's got draft picks. And if you look at the draft capital valuation chart, the Bears have the fourth most draft capital available to them. So he's got the draft capital, and he's got, and if he's smart about it, he's going to add to that. He's got all the money in the world to do whatever he wants. It's going to be how good is his pro scouting, you know, scouting guys that are in the NFL to sign as free agents or trade. And how good is his draft eye? And to be honest, you know, the Bears had a lot of offensive linemen that they drafted last year, and they've kind of, other than Braxton Jones, we haven't heard any of them. You know, do any of them take a step up? If that's the case, you know, that makes last year's draft class look better. I mean, Doug Kramer was a center. He got hurt, got a Lisfranc injury during the preseason and missed the whole season. You know, is he somebody that you can rely on to be, you know, a solid backup so you can send Sam Mustipher packing? About Tyre Carter, he was a guy that you were high on. Is he going to get, you know, basically redshirted this year and the opportunity to, you know, play next year? So there's just a lot of questions that we have to answer here.
Yep, exactly.
But going into the game today, I think we all knew the Bears were going to tank.
Yes.
There was no reason for them to win. And obviously the coaching staff is not intentionally trying to lose. The players clearly weren't trying to lose, but the front office had to do what they had to do. They shut down Justin Fields, which essentially was going to guarantee they were going to lose because he's their offense. And honestly, the Minnesota Vikings had way too much of a problem putting this team away when they're, you know, were the number two seed in the NFC and the Bears have the number one overall pick. Like, I think the Vikings are going to get, you know, boat raced in the postseason.
Yeah, I mean, I've been saying all year I didn't think the Vikings were that good, but we'll see what they do against the Giants. I could see them being the Giants. I just don't know if they go any further than there. But there's kind of two things I look at when I watch the Vikings. It's number one, how good is that defense? And that defense has given up a lot of points. And two, you watch Kirk Cousins. And again, Kirk Cousins, the stats look great. The stats always look really dang good for Kirk Cousins, but there are times when you watch him where you're just like, how are the stats this good? And, you know, even today, there were several times when he had a wide open guy and he just flat overthrew them. And, you know, I'm sure part of it was the fact that they were just like, okay, we could technically get the number two seed, but the 49ers are probably not losing to the Arizona Cardinals. So we'll try, but not try overly hard. But there were other times where I was watching the Vikings play and I'm kind of like, what really? I don't know. I mean, you saw what happened to them against Green Bay. You saw what happened to them against the Cowboys. You saw what they were doing against the Colts. And then the Colts, who were just historically bad these past few weeks, just completely and utterly collapsed and gave that game away. there are a lot of chinks in the armor of that Vikings team.
Absolutely. And, you know, that the Giants aren't very good, but the Giants didn't play like anybody today against the Eagles, and the Eagles played their starters and couldn't put them away early at all. And they were playing Davis Webb. So if Daniel Jones and Saquon Barkley play next week, I'm not so sure the Vikings even win that game. But if they do win that game, they're just going to get blown out of the water the next game.
Kind of seems that way. I mean, the playoffs are weird, but I would put my money on the Eagles and the 49ers way over the Vikings right now. Heck, I would probably put them well, I don't know if I put the Cowboys over. We've seen what the Cowboys do in the postseason, but definitely I would put my money on the Eagles and the 49ers over. And look, I'm not trying to be like the Vikings are they're a rival. I hate them. I mean, I would say that about them no matter what division they played in.
Yeah. It's just, I mean, it's look at the NFL standings and they're like, okay, that's a really good record that they've put together. Fair?
Yeah.
But if you look at the, at their plus minus is they have a negative point differential.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the thing.
They're 13-4 and they've given up more points than they've scored. That's not good. That's a real bad sign. When you look at the 49ers have the same exact record and they're a plus. Let me do some math here. Plus 173. And the Vikings are -3.
Yeah. It's when you have -3 differential and you're the third seed in the NFC. I mean, you know, a big part of that has been, you know, plays happening during crunch time where, like, look at the Bills game. That play that Justin Jefferson made to make that catch, I mean, that was grade A, an amazing play by an amazing player. And that is the difference between a win or a loss. And then plus, you had that fumble recovery in that game. It goes to show, I mean, look at the Bears this year. They lost 7 games by 1 score, and the Vikings won a lot of games by 1 score. It goes to show how the one play that can make one difference, that can really help dictate a season, a regular season, and where you stand at the end of the year. The Vikings could easily have 3 or 4 less wins. But, you know, the plays towards the end of those games, they were able to execute on them. They had what they needed to win those games. And, you know, you could replay that game, those games again multiple times, and it might not always end that way. And the records could really vary. So again, it's showing the variance of what you could see during an NFL season.
I mean, you just look at their schedule is, week 2, they got blown out.
That was the Eagles, right?
Week 3, they squeaked by the Lions. Then they squeaked by the Saints. They squeaked by the Bears. They squeaked by the Dolphins. They squeaked by the Cardinals. They squeaked by the Commanders. They squeaked by the Bills. They got blown out by the Cowboys. They squeaked by the Patriots. They squeaked by the Jets. They lost to the Lions. They squeaked by the Colts. They squeaked by the Giants. They got blown out by the Packers. And then they beat the Bears handily today. So they've really just won close games and then got blown out a few times. I just don't have confidence in this team. Honestly, if the Packers win tonight,
which they probably will.
I except the Packers are going to be playing the 49ers. But I would have more confidence in the Packers than I would the Vikings.
Yeah, I probably would too at this point, despite the records.
But I mean, looking at this Bears game today, it was the good, not a lot of penalties.
Bayless Jones had a nice game.
I hope all the people that just like Matt Spiegel, who were just ready to launch him into space, if they just stopped for a minute and be like, he's a rookie on a bad team, and let him have some time to acclimate. He's starting to play a lot better.
Last few weeks, I mean, honestly, going back to that Bills game on Christmas Eve, he's looked a lot better. I think that last awful fumble was a motivation, and he's really turned it around in those last few games. And I say good for him, because even if his value is just as a good return man, you need that. You need that guy. So,
yeah, I mean,
it's less to figure out.
You know, you look at this roster of the wide receiver core. You're going to have healthy Darnell Mooney back. You're going to have a healthy Chase Claypool. You're probably adding another top three guy, whether trade, free agency, or in the draft. You'll have Equanimeous St. Brown, who you just signed for another one-year deal. And you'll have Velus Jones. I think that's a good spot to be in for him, because when he goes in, he's going to have plays designed for him. He's going to go in, be able to stretch the field, but not be relied on. He's going to have those matchups where, you put your number one guy on probably Darnell Mooney. And then by the time you have that speedster out there, he's going against a number three nickel or dime cornerback. And he's taking it to the house. You know, that's a good spot for him. And yeah, he doesn't need to beat somebody with moves. He just has to be fast, which he is.
Yes, he is.
Or put him in those spots where he just does a double move. That's it. And if they stick with him, who cares? Then all he does is takes that cornerback out of the play and opens the field up for wherever else you throw the run the ball. But on that double move, if he either, you know, his speed just overtakes the guy, or somebody falls down, or there's a broken play, you're going to have some big plays with him. I think that's the goal, you know, not relying on him to be a top guy, but using that speed as a weapon as a complement to your other receivers. And maybe that's me being looking through rose colored glasses, but I think having a good top three wide receivers and have them be healthy allows you to do a lot more things with Velus Jones Jr.
No, I agree. I agree. Totally.
But other than that, this game was kind of crappy.
As expected.
You know, you couldn't really get a ton going on the ground. Nathan Peterman was just absolutely under pressure the whole time. You brought Boyle in, and he threw the worst interception I've ever seen thrown.
Yeah, that was a great tank pick. So thank you for that, Tim Boyle.
I mean, Claypool just looked at him and was like, what the fuck?
he was open, man. He got the separation.
And, you know, at first the announcers were just like trying to make that like Claypool. But Claypool, like, clearly afterwards, by his motion to the quarterback, was the quarterback threw that to the wrong spot. And it was just overall bad. You know, defense, you played with just a whole bunch of nobodies. your cornerbacks for today were Harrison Hand, Breon Borders, Michael Ojemudia, and Greg Stroman. Who the hell are these people?
I have no idea. I looked at the actives. I'm like, who?
Yeah. I mean, this was tanking at its finest because Jalon Johnson, you put him on injured reserve for, it was one of those ones. He probably could have played if they were playoff bound. Two other of your cornerbacks out with injury. Kendall Vildor has been out. Like, you just, everybody's just been hurt. And part of it is, you know, if you have the option of this guy could be back and play at 85% for the final game, or you go, I'm just going to put him on injured reserve and tank this season. Why in the hell wouldn't you?
Yeah. I mean, seriously, you got your number one QB out and you know it's at stake. The best way you can lose without actually going out on the field and losing is sitting all the valuable guys you have left. And when I mean going out on the field losing, I mean like literally just like standing there not trying.
Yeah.
You got to make it look like you're trying to win, but oh, hey, what's up there, Kyler Gordon? How you feeling? I feel great, coach. No, you feel sick. You have something. No, I'm fine. No. You're sick. You're going to be sitting.
Yeah, Jalon Jones, how's it going? I feel okay. Nope, concussion.
They have Ding Dong George in his doctor's uniform.
He's like on my medical chart. Are you writing that in crayon? It's purple crayon.
He's writing with purple crayon on a Denny's menu.
Like, that's not a medical chart. That's a kid's menu from Denny's. He's like, I can fold it into a hat.
He's circling things. Oh, you have a bad case of pancake stackitis. You can't play this week.
You've got cat whiskers that are purple.
He's doing the maze when you trace the crayon through the maze. Oh, let's see what the diagnosis is. Oh no, you've been eaten by alligators. You can't play this week. It's like that clip from The Simpsons, if you've ever seen it, where Homer's trying to do the kids menu. He's trying to do that maze, ends up again in the crocodile mouth, goes, oh, then he crumples it up. And there's like just a pile of crumpled up menus. The waitress comes by, another kid's menu, sir, please.
Oh, goodness gracious.
Sorry, go ahead. No, I was just going to say, I'm really, really glad that they were smart about this game. The Bears were. Because I was worried after they left Justin Fields out there for that entire Lions game, they're going to be like, well, we need to get Justin Fields the experience. He wants to play. He's dying to play. I was worried. I'm like, oh, are they going to let that influence their decision? But they wasted no time in that. Thank goodness.
Could you imagine if he like tore an ACL in this game?
I'm pretty sure Hallis Hall would have projectiles thrown over the fence.
Because
people on the other side,
that would put you in such a bad situation.
Yeah, because then you'd be screwed next year.
Yeah, you'd be screwed next year. You would be where the Cardinals are. They're a terrible team and lost their quarterback.
Right. Hey, Sean, you know, we didn't do the show last week, so I have to ask you this. Is what were you feeling during that Lions game in the second half when Fields was still out there?
I was just praying, please don't get hurt. Please don't get hurt. Please don't get hurt. That's all I could think of every time he would take a hit, every time he would drop back. I'm like, just please don't get hurt. This is a dumb game, out of hand. Why is he still in there?
Yeah, I hated the fact that he was in there in that second half. And I mean, I'm just wondering, was there logic that they knew they were going to shut him down? in week 18. So they tried to squeeze every bit of playing time he had possible left in that game. I mean, after a while, it's like, you're not getting any experience here. Taking the snap and then having pressure immediately and getting hit a million times with no one to throw to, how is that gaining any valuable experience at that point?
It's not. I mean,
as soon as the medical tent went up, he should have been out.
Yeah. If they had a good offensive line or a decent offensive line, okay, sure. There's experience to be had, but with a bad offensive line, nothing good can come of that.
No. And I mean, there was nothing at stake here. If this ended up being like the Dallas game where you were never going to win, but you were able to consistently score points and you were getting protection, like you said, okay, but that was not the case.
Yeah, it was the smart thing to do, because you're not going to, if you weren't going to sit, not let him play and be the backup or anything like that, is he's a competitor. He's going to want to be out there. You just have to medically shut him down. And yeah, That's what they did. And the reports are he was not happy about that, but it's for the best. And Ryan Poles hopefully sat down with him like, hey, listen, you are so important to this team. We can't have you get hurt in a meaningless game at the end of the season in January in Chicago. We can't have that.
Yeah, thank goodness they were smart about it.
So you come into next season with nobody with serious injuries. Is the Jalen Johnson injury. I guarantee if they were in the playoff hunt and they needed to win this game, he would have been back. They wouldn't have put him on injured reserve. He would have been back. Darnell Mooney will be back. Claypool played today. Kyler Gordon will be back fine. Eddie Jackson will be back fine. As everybody is back healthy, which is good. So you've got money, you've got draft picks, you've got health. And so you can really start this clock for the Bears right now.
Yep.
And Virginia McCaskey is now 100 years old officially.
Yeah, God bless her.
She might live us. I don't think she was at the game today.
I have no idea.
Which, that's not good. She's always at the games.
Right.
So hopefully she's okay.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not looking good for the likelihood that she makes it to see a Bears Super Bowl again. And that's not being morbid. That is just, we are several years away. And at least 2 years away from being competitive. And she's 100 years old.
She's almost as old as the NFL has been around.
Yeah. She,
like, that's crazy to think about.
I mean, Betty White didn't make it to 100. She died like a week short.
Yeah. She was very, very close.
And like, just so few people make it to 100.
Yeah, it's a very small percentage.
So, I mean, props to her. She's a tough old bird. And yeah, she's the majority owner of one of the few franchises that are still family owned. And for good or bad, you wish for another happy and healthy year for her.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. There is something I did want to talk about, and I alluded to it earlier, but I feel like it's important to acknowledge the fact that we've played our last Bears game under Ted Phillips.
We have. Isn't he retiring officially at the
February?
In February.
Yeah. And that's another reason why this offseason is so big, because they're going to try to find a successor. And we've heard rumors about who that could be, including, what was it, the Big Ten commissioner?
Yes, Kevin Warren.
Yes.
And apparently the rumors are that it's almost a done deal.
And here's the thing, too, is when you get that guy in place, you know what one of the big things is going to be on the docket. And that's going to be the Arlington Heights stuff.
And I want to talk about that, too. But, yeah, it's Kevin Warren he was an executive for the Vikings when they built their new stadium.
Mm-hmm.
So he has experience there.
That's a damn nice stadium.
Yeah, it is a nice stadium. He has a huge chunk of his career has been in the NFL and with multiple teams within the NFC North. He was an executive for the Lions and the Vikings. So he has that perspective of being in this division and in the NFL. Plus, he's coming from arguably one of the most powerful positions in all of sports, the commissioner of the Big Ten. That's a really big, powerful job. And he just negotiated the biggest TV contract in college football history. So you have a guy that's built
quite the
stadium.
Resume.
Yeah, not shitting on the Bears job. This job is a big job, but it's almost a step down for him to leave as the Big Ten commissioner and to take this Bears job.
I mean, yeah, you're presiding over an entire entity, which is the Big Ten. And, you know, the Big Ten's kind of a big deal. But, yeah, I mean, it's going to be one of those things where you hope that he's in this job for a long time. You know, he's worn a lot of different hats, and you want him to wear this hat for a while if he is indeed the guy.
And it sounds like it is, because his home is in Chicago, because the Big Ten headquarters is in Chicago. The Big Ten headquarters it's right across the street from where the Chicago Dogs play, are in Rosemont.
I've been to that museum.
My wife interviewed for a job there.
Commissioner?
And no, that would be awesome if my wife was the commissioner. But on the TV broadcasting stuff for the Big Ten Network.
If she was the Big Ten commissioner, you'd be sitting in the office playing around like a little kid. Hey, honey, I found these great footballs in the office. Sean, those are historical relics from 1920. Don't play with those. Woo-wee, look at this thing.
Look at me. I'm wearing Red Grange's helmet.
Oh, it fell apart.
It disintegrated. How did you get peanut butter and jelly stains on everything?
You have a giant jug of Kool-Aid and you walk in and she's got a giant like desk full of important documents and you just spill this Kool-Aid all over the desk.
I'm not even spilling it. I'm just clanking it so hard and it's splashing out. It's like dribble all over the place. I'm touching everything with my peanut butter and jelly fingers.
Madam Commissioner, your husband's at it again. There's Kool-Aid puddles all over the hallway, and several of our executives have slipped and broke their backs. Can you please tell him to stop?
Can you tell him to stop making Kool-Aid in the little brown jug award between Minnesota and Michigan?
You start making Kool-Aid and all like the cup-based trophies.
But Kevin Warren is a Chicagoan. So for him, that's why it was under the radar that he was able to slip in and interview, because he drove the 20 minutes from his house to Hallis Hall, under the radar. And for him, I'm sure the Bears are going to have to pony up and pay him, because I'm guessing that the that position is like a $1 to $2 million a year job, and he's leaving like a $4 to $5 million job at the Big Ten. So you're probably going to have to pony up to pay him. But the fact that you need somebody that's going to hit a home run in this role, building the stadium, I think that's a drop in the bucket of paying a guy an extra, you know, $2 to $3 million a year. Absolutely. in order for to succeed in a $1 billion budget.
Yeah.
Then the question becomes, do you keep the same structure where he and Ryan Poles are in separate silos, or does Ryan Poles now start reporting to Kevin Warren, assuming Kevin Warren is the guy?
Yeah. I mean, that's obviously a big question too. What I would hope is that Kevin, I mean, I would trust if Kevin Warren had input on the sports end, I would trust him much, much more than Ted Phillips. But I feel like, you know, and I feel like Kevin Warren's a smart enough guy where, sure, maybe Ryan Poles does report to him, but I don't feel like Kevin Warren would be the type of guy to kind of take charge and make big decisions that Ryan Poles normally would. I feel like there would at least be the dynamic of Ryan Poles making the football decisions, Kevin Warren being more of the business decision side. But again, if you're going to mix any of the two at any point, I'd much rather have a guy like Kevin Warren with the sports knowledge than Ted Phillips. That makes sense.
Yeah. And I don't know how much Kevin Warren has in the understanding of an ability to oversee the football side of things. So maybe they do keep it as the GM oversees all football. And
that's this what role, I'm hoping.
And this role. And sure, if it comes time to replace Ryan Poles, yeah, he should be involved in the hiring process.
Are they going to consult Bill Polian and Ernie Accorsi on this matter?
Bring back Soup.
Yeah, Soup Campbell.
Rehire Soup to come back for the hiring process.
I could totally see it.
Old Soup. But I mean, it's I think I can't think of anybody else who would be better suited to do that job than Kevin Warren. And I didn't think that was even a possibility until I heard, that he had interviewed. And then I went, wow, that would be a home run if the Bears got him.
Yeah, I'm hoping that he ends up being the guy.
But I wanted to touch on, you mentioned the Arlington Heights Stadium. Did you see the Bears' latest pitch?
I didn't see the details.
They made a sizzle reel, like a 5-minute video, where they showed what they were proposing. Mm-hmm. And it was basically a brand new metro station there that had the CTA and metro coming all in to right across the street. So no more having to walk, you know, a mile from the L or that old ass station, having a brand new station there.
Da station.
Having a stadium with a dome, with all types of new skyboxes in there. Fine dining restaurants, a whole shopping district, and they showed what it would look like. And they were like, because it would be indoors, you could have sporting event or events that you could never have before. So they showed like a basketball stadium in there, I'm guessing would be the Big Ten championship or the NCAA tournament. And then they had like other events being played there. And then the last one was they put a monster truck track in there.
Yes.
And then there would be a concert venue that would be outside of it, and it would all be part of the museum campus. And and it actually looked nice, but it seemed a little bit desperate. Like, I do want the stadium to be in Chicago, but here's my thing about it. I have concerns about Arlington Heights. I have concerns about Chicago. My concerns about Chicago are, where are they going to play until, because the building of all of this is going to take a long time.
You can't play in Champaign again.
You cannot play in Champaign again.
In these modern standards, you can't do that.
So I don't know where you play.
Play at Wrigley, like old time's sakes.
Yeah, like, you're not going to play in Indianapolis. You're not going to play in Detroit. Like, where are you going to play?
At Hallis Hall.
So I don't know. And, you know, and that would be, and what is the time frame for the city to be able to do this? And what are the terms are going to be for leasing it? Because obviously if the city's building it, they're going to own it. And how is that going to, the financials going to work for you? Now, on the other hand, I've brought these up before. My concerns about Arlington Heights is, I get there's a metro station there, but it is not a metro station in Chicago is a whole lot different than a metro station in Arlington Heights, because Chicago is the hub. All the train lines go into Chicago from every direction. All of the train lines do not go out to Arlington Heights. So essentially, certain spots in Chicago could go there, and McHenry could go there. Like, if you're coming from Joliet, or you're coming from Indiana, or you're coming from the south side of Chicago, you can't get there by train. If you're coming from Naperville, you can't get there by train. So you lose a lot of the public transportation to get there. And that means way more people are driving. And if you've ever been there to the racetrack on a busy horse racing day, you know how miserable that driving is. And the NFL is going to have way, way more congestion than they will for horse racing. So the infrastructure is just not in place, and Arlington Heights and the citizens of Arlington Heights don't seem to have any interest in helping alleviate those issues. You know, and the Bears can't just go, hey, we'll expand the roads and do these, you know, create a better interchange for the expressway. They can't do that. They don't have the authority to do that. Even if they had the money to do it, they don't have the authority to do that. So I have concerns all over the place. And that's really why we need somebody that's not Ted Phillips or George McCaskey in charge of all of that.
Yeah, no, I mean, those are all valid, and I agree. I mean, you make all good points. It's more complicated than just building one stadium in one spot. The infrastructure around it, you know, the accessibility, all those things do matter. And one of the big complaints about Soldier Field is the location, the accessibility.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's, and part of it is just like, you know, the train situation needs to be better. And the L is, you know, there needs to be more parking, and the L lets you off like a mile away. And you got to hoof it, and which is fine, when the first half of the season, the second half of the season, you're like, man, I have to walk through the frozen tundra, you know, to get to the stadium.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's hard enough to go. Like, I love the museum campus. I mean, my family's a members of the Field Museum, and we love going to the aquarium and the planetarium, and I love that area. And having the stadium there is nice, but it's a pain in the ass to get to. The parking situation is abysmal. That has to be addressed for everything, not just regardless of what happens with the Bears. You need to address that because it's hard to park there to go to the Field Museum.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely.
So the city needs to have better public transportation to those campuses, and, you know, having the Bears stay is an excuse to kick the funds to do that. So selfishly, it's also important for, you know, my family, to make all that better. My end goal is the Bears stadium situation has to be an absolute home run.
Mm-hmm.
It can't be a ground rule double. It can't be a triple. It can't even be an inside the park home run. I want it to be a towering home run onto Waveland Avenue. That's what it has to be.
Agreed, because we did not see that home run with the Soldier Field renovation.
No, that anything was a throwing error that got you to first base.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
I mean, it was just a disaster. And Ted Phillips, you can blame the city because they ultimately paid for that. But that was Ted Phillips driving that bus. That was Ted Phillips. Sweaty meat fingers all over it.
Sounds like a comic book villain.
That is Ted Phillips' complete and utter failure. So whoever replaces him has the opportunity to right this ship and make it beautiful. And not only that, not only do you have to make a stadium that's going to be amazing and has all the amenities and brings, you know, value to the community where it is and has, you know, all of the infrastructure in place, it also has to be future-proofed.
Mm-hmm.
You have to think about how it's going to evolve. You can't have, like, you look at when they built the new Comiskey, is in some ways that got dated very quickly, and they've had to do renovations and upgrades and things there already to make it a better stadium. And you can't have that in the NFL. This has to be a stadium that's amazing for years to come. And that one where in 15, 20 years, you look back and you're like, oh man, you know, the Bears' new stadium, you're like, oh, the stadium's been there for 20 years. And you're like, oh my God. Like, it doesn't seem like it. It still seems like a new stadium.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know,
I'm with you all the way. This has got to be a slam dunk. The standards are high. Look at what they have in Minnesota now. Those are the types of standards you want to follow.
Yep. You have to get a Super Bowl out of it.
Yeah.
A Super Bowl needs to be played in Chicago. And that it's just, you have to get all kinds of things have to happen in that stadium that Soldier Field doesn't allow you to do, partly because it's open to the elements in Chicago and partly because it's too small.
Yeah. There's a lot of problems and you're running out of concessions.
It's funny, my friend that texted me the video from the city released, about their plans. I watched it and I just texted him back and I was like, man, that's going to be perfect for the Chicago Jaguars.
Oh.
And I guarantee that if the Bears do officially go to Arlington Heights and build the stadium there, the city of Chicago will try to either bring a team that's moving, like the Jaguars, or an expansion team to the city.
Could you imagine two teams in the city again?
I mean, I wasn't alive for the last time, but you know, it's funny because the people I do know that were alive then, like, some of them are still Cardinals fans.
Really?
Yeah, they've just been like, the Cardinals are my team, so I hated the Bears. Kind of like, you know, Cubs fans that hate White Sox and White Sox fans that hate the Cubs. Like, they've kept those, like, I hated the Bears because I was a Cardinals fan. And they've kept that loyalty.
Yeah, I always wondered how many people were still Cardinals fans in the city.
I mean, I think most of them are, you know, dying off.
I think so, too. I mean, it's been a while.
Because, I mean, they left. I mean, they left Chicago. Jeez. What, 1960?
Yeah, it was a long time ago.
So we're looking at like 60 some years ago. So, anybody that was a diehard is dying off at this point.
Right. I just don't know if they pass that down to their kids and their grandkids or whatnot. I don't know. I don't see a lot of Cardinals apparel in the city, but I believe there's definitely still some out there.
I mean, it's, you know, it's probably hard to pass that fandom down when you can't watch the games on TV without like a special package.
Right.
But we'll talk more Bears, you know, as we get, you know, further along and, you know, when free agency starts to come into play, because we've still got a bunch of time before the franchise tags have to be placed and the free agency starts and before the combine and, all that. So we'll talk more about that, but I mean, the NFL free agency starts or doesn't start for several months. The February 21st marks the beginning of the franchise tag window, and that ends on March 7th. And the free agency period starts on March 15th. So we've got several months before, you know, we really get into the thick of things.
Exactly. Anything substantial happening outside possibly the official hiring of the new president.
Yeah. So as we get closer and closer, we'll start talking more and more. But for now, the season is over. The Bears have the number one pick. And, you know, and we've got a lot of money to throw around. And we'll know the exact figure once the league announces their official cap number for next year and the Bears start making cuts.
Yep.
The next thing I want to talk about was something I wasn't expecting to talk about tonight. And I'm sure you read about Liam Hendricks.
I did.
You know, if anything, if I would have had to guess that we would be talking about Liam Hendricks at this point would be the fact that he would be traded. And instead, you know, we get an announcement that he's undergoing cancer treatment. And that's, you know, all of these things are just way bigger than baseball.
Yeah. Big time.
You know, he's young, he's healthy. He's got financial resources to be able to, and lives in a city that has some of the best healthcare in the country. I'm confident that he's going to beat it, but not something that you want to see him going through.
No, so it was heartbreaking to hear.
Yeah. So he announced that he has non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and, you know, I haven't heard any details about anything, but I'm curious of when he found this, because the season hasn't been over that long. Did he find out during the off season so far?
Yeah, I don't know. I have no idea. And, you know, it was completely unexpected. Like you said, had absolutely no idea we'd be talking about this with him, but what we can do is send good vibes and prayers for him. And I'm sure that he's going to be in the very best of care. He's got the support of a lot of people, you know, the White Sox organization, MLB baseball, the resources here in the city of Chicago. He's going to be in really good hands, and that we just pray that he makes a very speedy recovery, because this is for anybody. When you hear that someone has cancer, it's one of the most heartbreaking things to hear. And especially for a guy who's liked by so many in Liam Hendricks, he's, I think, seen as one of the favorites in that clubhouse, you know, somebody that people look up to. He plays with a lot of passion and fire, and we just pray that he's going to be okay and that he can make a good recovery.
Yeah. And I'm seeing that he's going to start his treatment tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
So probably by the time you listen to this, he'll be already undergoing his first treatment. So it's wish him the best. And, you know, he's going to have amazing care here in Chicago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. We like you said, we have it pretty good here in terms of top tier medical care.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I hope people look at the humanity over the sport and don't start asking questions like, is he going to play this year? Is he going to be here for spring training? Who cares?
His life is more important than anything. And
yeah,
if we didn't learn that from Damar Hamlin, I don't know what's going to teach you that.
And I'm glad you brought that the Hamlin situation up. Is I don't know if you saw the running back for the Eagles, I guess, was best friends with him, and he was FaceTiming him when he ran out on the field with his phone for pregame. Mm-hmm. And so he's awake. He's posted Instagram posts.
He's tweeting.
It seems like he's going to make a full recovery, and that's amazing.
And that charity has raised millions.
And, you know, I tweeted out as well, is he's alive because of a medical device. You know, being at an NFL game, you have a defibrillator device that is available. You know, the big sports will have those, but just think about if this was a high school football game, or, you know, like a semi-pro game, or a peewee football game, and the same thing happened. They probably don't have those devices, and he dies.
Well, and also think this too. One person who deserves a lot of credit, or, you know, people were those medical professionals on the field. And, you know, the NFL obviously has the resources not only to have devices like that, but top tier medical professionals. I mean, do you remember when that leg injury happened to Zach Miller And the physician who realized how serious it was on the field, like, saved his life.
Yeah. But, you know, if I hope that folks that have the resources and the disposable income to also consider, there are a lot of charities trying to raise money to have those devices at smaller sporting events. You know, they're not the most expensive things, but they're also not cheap. You know, so raising money to help, you know, bring that type of device to all sporting events to save the life of all, you know, any athlete, you know, from any level. You know, I threw some money at both his charity and a charity to raise money for that. Mm-hmm. So I hope others do as well, because it's, you know, he's alive because of, you know, some great medical professionals and having a defibrillator device there.
Yeah. I think that there was a lot that people, you know, there was a lot of concern even after he was, you know, after he was gone to the hospital. They said he was stable, but critical condition, there was still so much concern. And the fact that within a week he was able to wake up, you know, that's really, really special that he's alive, because we could have easily lost him.
I mean, you know, not only that, it's he could have lived, but had brain injury.
Yes.
You know, all kinds
permanent
of other
brain damage. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And they didn't. And so it's absolutely amazing. And, you know, I don't know if you've ever seen somebody getting chest compressions and CPR. Mm-hmm. It's not a pretty sight.
It's horrifying.
I mean, like, you break bones. you're compressing somebody's chest to push their heart to pump blood. Like, it is. You know, it's traumatic to watch. And so for all of his teammates and the Bengals players that all, you know, stood there, you know, I'm glad they almost formed a human shield to block that, because, you know, nobody needed to see that.
Yeah. You saw how visibly upset those players on the field were, and the concern from the crowd and the concern from the announcers, the broadcasters, and everybody covering the game. You know, this just wasn't some guy that went down and they were just trying to get him back up again. It was so much more serious than that. And even though you didn't actually see it because he was surrounded by guys, the seriousness was very evident just by looking on the players' faces.
Absolutely. And I'm just so glad that, you know, things are working themselves out. And I hope this doesn't derail his young career. Because yeah, this was a serious event, and it's just a complete, you know, fluke of a thing. I don't think anybody's a fish. Any of his doctors that have seen him have released exactly what happened, but there's been a lot of emergency room doctors and cardiologists that have you know, done videos to talk about what most likely happened. And essentially, he needed the direct hit to the heart and the way the electrical cycle in the heart happens, he gets hit at an exact spot during that cycle. It causes the cardiac arrest. And most of the time when that happens, it's baseball with a ball hitting somebody's chest. But T. Higgins essentially hitting him with a shoulder right in the chest plate, and, you know, where his heart is, that's basically did the same thing. You know, people are like, well, the baseball's thrown so much faster. You know, T. Higgins wasn't going 100 miles an hour. But what does a baseball weigh?
Not a lot.
Not a lot. What does T. Higgins weigh?
and a hell lot more than a baseball.
And the force generated is mass times acceleration. So, you know, T. Higgins is not going slow, but he's also a hell of a lot bigger. And when he lowered his shoulder, all that force didn't get dissipated into the rest of his body. It got focused to the shoulder, pinpoint right there. So I'm going to guess he generated a lot more force than a baseball.
And people need to stop putting any sort of blame or making T. Higgins feel about that. I know it's very few, very, very few, but if anybody is, just stop. Okay.
Yeah. Never in a million years did either one of those players think that was going to happen.
No,
during that play,
he made a regular football play.
Yeah. T. Higgins was just trying to protect himself from a big hit and protect the ball. And it was a fluke thing that you hope to never see ever again. And, I'm just glad that the player is still alive, and I hope T. Higgins doesn't have any sort of guilt about it, because he didn't do anything wrong. It was, you know, just shitty luck.
Yeah, exactly.
Is there any other baseball that you want to talk?
Nah, I think I'm going to save that for next week.
I mean, yeah, it's kind of slow right now.
Yeah, I mean, the Cubs made a move, but I think we'll talk about it next week.
The Hosmer? Did we not talk about that? Yeah, it doesn't move the needle enough to talk about. I don't really want to talk about the Bulls tonight. I want to see what happens.
They've been winning games. We'll give them that. But we're going to have more time to talk Bulls, Blackhawks baseball now that the season's over. And there's going to be that period of time where nothing's going to be happening for the Bears for a while. So we'll have that time.
I think that's going to do it for this episode of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. Anything else you wanted to add?
Nope.
All right. Well, make sure you hit subscribe however you listen to podcasts, whether it's iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, Google Play, Spotify. Share this podcast with your friends. That's how we grow the show. Follow us on social media at Swirsky Sports, facebook.com/SwirskySports, SwirskySports.com, or ShyFanPat2 for Alex on Twitter, or AlexanderJPatCreative.com for all the cool stuff that Alex does. And again, thank you guys so much for listening. And until next time, bear down.
Cubs win! What a lucky break! The good Lord wants the Cubs to win!
We thank Ditka and God for all they have provided. Oh,
Cubs win! Cubs win! Cubs win!
Oh, I don't want her, you can have her. She's a Packer fan. She can't fit in my van. And she looks like...
Remember, New Yorkers, smoking crack is not legal on planes.
Bears 31 to -7.
The Bears!
Oh, when the Bears go bearing down.